Welcome back to the VFX Existential Crisis Podcast. I'm Chris and this is Graham. And today we wanted to do an episode that just sort of, we wanted to do a check-in personally about kind of how we're doing with our VFX Existential crises. But also, we've been doing the podcast now since I think May. So I think this is going to be maybe episode 10. 9 or 10, something like that, depending on how you count.
Double digits.
Yes. And we've been doing some reflecting on kind of what we want to do with it in the future. And we were going to talk a little bit about that later. But let's start with updates. So, Graham, how's your VFX existential crisis going these days?
Yeah, it's good. It's definitely different, I have to say. So I think we've talked about how I pivoted into solopreneurship. I've got my own little consulting business going. I think I've had at different times 5 or 6 clients. I've got two ongoing ones now who are amazing. One of them, they're both in the visual effects space, which is natural. It's kind of, so I've got my fingers in the pie still.
Yeah.
One is Bind Studio. They basically help create a pop-up visual effects studio to run a production.
Cool.
And then the other is
is that more for like an on-set kind of scenario or?
Yeah, there's actually 2 scenarios. So the first scenario is if you're running a multi-vendor show, they have a solution where you submit your daily, your output, if you're a vendor, through their Bind Hub, and it helps track and slate the stuff. So like a lot of the admin, you can do your own VFX pulls and things like that. It makes the process a bit more efficient, keeps the errors out of it. And editors love it because it saves them a lot of time.
Right. Yeah.
Makes sense. Then the other one is you spin up a shotgrid flow, whatever they're calling it these days.
They call it now.
Instance. Yeah. Yeah. And you can support a team of visual effects studios. So kind of what we've seen is the optimal mix is a lot of VFX supervisor producer teams will create a local team to do easy comps and some light CG. So often driving comps or cleanups, that sort of thing. They keep that in-house with a small team of compers. And then they have vendors submit their more complex work, and that kind of services both. It actually reduces the shot costs a lot for that work that they end up doing themselves, which is almost 40%, which is pretty cool.
Interesting. So
in this era of austerity, it's kind of a really strong selling feature. And that's cool. What's interesting, and this is more broad, is like in networking for Bind, I've talked to a lot of VFX supervisors, a lot of VFX producers. The persona that I'm after is sort of the independent VFX producer, independent VFX supervisor. That is to say they're not at a vendor because this isn't really going to help a vendor very much. It's really more for the show side teams. And things appear to be picking up. I think we've joked in the past that like we've heard that for 3 years. Is this the year that it's actually going to materialize? A lot of people are on shows but haven't yet officially been greenlit. But it sounds like the fall could actually be, and look, I mean, manage expectations. It's not going to be like 2019 again or whatever, the peak year 2021. It's going to be a slight improvement over what we're at now. But
if you sink to the bottom, going up a little bit is good. Yeah.
So I think we'll go up, and I think it'll be a permanent, my view is a permanent increase. So if it goes up 5% or 10%, it'll be a permanent 5 or 10% increase, sort of resetting a new normal, but it's not going to go up.
Stabilization, basically.
We've been through the trough and now it's going to kind of come up and plateau. There's other information that kind of leads me to that belief too. There's an article this week that viewers of Netflix drop off after season 1. So they're all hyped up for season 1, but it takes them so long to deliver season 2 that sometimes the audiences even age out of the shows they've been watching. They're teeny boppers when they watch K-pop Demon Hunters. By the time season 2 comes out, they're junior adults or whatever. So I think it seems to be unique to Netflix. So there's a lot of conjecture. Is this because they're dumping episodes in bundles and the week after week sort of affinity that people build up in the more traditional model doesn't happen if you can binge watch it on a Sunday? Because it doesn't seem to have this, the same thing doesn't seem to be happening in HBO and other sort of premium providers. So
I heard, I saw in an article that there's a rumor that they're talking about making streaming channels, which is like, the hilarious deconstruction of broadcast television to recreate it.
I'm watching the World Cup on Amazon, I think, or Crave, like one of the streaming services. So I have successfully ditched cable to pay five people for the same thing again.
And probably more in the end. Yeah. But that was client number one. What's client number two?
The client number two is in the same space. They're the Rebel Fleet. They're a DIT company out of New Zealand, and they've been doing a lot of work in that neck of the woods, so Australia, New Zealand. I think they've got 15 productions globally going on right now, which is pretty significant.
Cool.
They've created a software that does metadata management. So your HDRs, your LiDAR, your lens grid data, your lenses, all the stuff you need in post that often goes missing. And they manage it all the way through the process. So it's really designed right now to support everyone from your post soup, to your colorist, to your editor, and increasingly VFX people too. So it's pretty cool because like I said, it's giving us an opportunity to talk to a lot of cool people. They want to migrate a lot of their service business into North America, where obviously there's a huge opportunity.
Sure.
And it's been pretty cool.
So it's interesting because I think a lot of our listeners are maybe more vendor side, mm-hmm. and they probably hear about this stuff, but they don't necessarily deal with the friction indirectly. So like the way I'm reading it is a lot of the problems these two businesses are trying to solve, and this is maybe an interesting thing to think about for all of us, is like a business is trying to solve a problem for somebody. And, you know, like when plates are late, sometimes that's decision making that delays it, but often it's just the grind of going through the process of, you know, tracking and, you know, ferrying, like delivery and processing of plates. And you know, anyone who's worked in a compositing department knows the opposite, which is like when we ship the QuickTimes and we have to make the, you know, EXRs, and then we have to QC them, and then we have to make mats and all these kind of like friction elements. And, you know, one of the pieces of advice I used to tell every coordinator is the sooner you make friends with the client side assistant editor, the better, because it's a major friction point from us to them. And then when you're talking about the DIT, it's also the opposite way as well. So, and a lot of these shows now over the last while have become multi-vendor shows. So you're not dealing with one group where it's maybe easy to find a rhythm. You have to put it out to multiple. And then, you know, a lot of people use like Sync Sketch and things like that, or their own shot grid, on set. But that doesn't necessarily interact well with media. And so it's the same thing with like review tools. They're all kind of work, but they're slightly imperfect.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they're trying to solve some of those problems, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, the adoption level is good too. Like Netflix is already using them and Apple's already using them to different degrees.
That's cool.
Again, I think the market is looking for innovation. And I think that's one of the things that we've touched on at other points in the past is like, there's a lot of pressure to reduce the prices, and whatever form that takes, that's what they want ultimately. And, you know, we're seeing some box office bombs in July. I think things are better in June. It was a pretty successful box office, but this month in July has not been that good so far. And I think we saw Moana bomb and Supergirl didn't do very well. And, you know, some of these maybe are legacy projects that are still working their way through the system because it takes, you know, 5 years for something to go through. But
Moana, like a show like Moana, is kind of like a formulaic win.
Yeah,
like it's already been successful, and they've had that pattern of I don't personally understand why they have to make everything live action, but it's worked for them. And but you know, so I don't know if it's the content or just the way we consume content that's sort of failing. I think there's a lot of judgments about how the immediate sort of dunk or pylon is like, well, the studios don't want to make movies and they're making shit all the time. But I don't know that it's that necessarily, or just people don't care as much about that kind of stuff. I'm curious to see how the Odyssey does.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
I really want to see that, actually.
I was talking to our common friend Darren this morning, and he was saying that and it's rung true to me. It's like before COVID, he was going to the movies once a week, like clockwork. Yeah. Every Tuesday night, he would go to the local theater, which now no longer exists. Yeah. You see a movie, whatever was playing. And I would totally fill up that content.
We live in the same neighborhood, so that
if I didn't see a movie once a week, I, you know, something was wrong. And I never really got back to that. And I think some of it for sure is the pattern of production has been unstable and the quality of movies has been hit or miss. And it's becoming increasingly expensive. So I don't want to put that risk in. Also, the fact that if you're willing to wait 30 days sort of at the high end, it's on streaming. It's like, you really got to want to go. So like the habit was broken and now the sort of value prop is different. So I'm also guilty of not returning to the theater. Although I'm looking forward to Spider-Man. I think that's going to kick ass.
I think, you know, the sort of quality component is, I think, overplayed. Like, because I used to go to the movies and watch bad movies. But it wasn't like $100 to take your family or $100 to take your family. It was like $5.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Like, there's a laziness component, which has crept into, you know, like I can just wait 2 months and it's on Disney Plus or it's on whatever. And it's the same with TV shows too. I think like some people will pass on a TV show because they're going to wait, see if it goes to season two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm not going to invest my time if it's not season two, which I think is weird. But
when you said it, when you said that there's some laziness creeping, and I thought you were going to say in the creative process, because I'm more on the camp that there has been laziness, and like this live action replication of animated movies, to me, that's just because it's safe and they don't have to take any, they don't perceive it as a risk. But here, I think we've seen that maybe we're at the end of that rope. We've seen like people are sick of superheroes. People are sick of remakes.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I think it's an odd, like, I know what you mean. It's unfortunate we're not seeing a diverse, I think you'd want to see a diverse a group of productions coming out as opposed to just these ones. But I don't know that it's like, it's not terribly surprising when there's less competition among studios. And, you know, like the market has proven up to this point that that's a winning strategy.
Sure. But there was a recent article that said that like, even younger viewers aren't watching new shows. They're by and large watching Friends and Cheers and the things we grew up on. Now, maybe there's a nostalgia element to that.
Yeah.
But I would argue there's a qualitative argument to that. Like people have strayed away from comedy because they just, you know, they don't want to offend anybody. And I think that's actually a realistic concern. Like you don't want to say something that's going to make part of your audience feel gross. But like it's gotten to the point where everything's so sanitized, no one will even do a comedy anymore. Like, when's the last time a comedy succeeded at theaters? Like, no one wants to finance that risk, right? So I do think that like there's just a lack of compelling content. I think it's changing. Like, I really liked Obsession a lot. I know that that's sort of, we talked about it. It's a bit of the flavor of the month because it spun out of YouTube, but it was actually legitimately good. Like, I enjoyed it. I thought the performances were great. I thought the character design or like the set design was amazing, especially when you consider what the budget was. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that, hopefully, because the risk is so low that they can be creative without a lot of these safety guardrails that are put in place to protect the investment that I think have started to really affect the interest level of these shows.
I think you hit the nail on the head, though. It's risk. And I think we've kind of, you know, everyone complains about Hollywood and the studios and as if it's some kind of, you know, group, not a group of people. but essentially it's like we've, in some ways, no one wants to take a risk. And so when no one takes a risk, like creative stuff doesn't come out good. And but at the same time, we've created a kind of audience that will not tolerate risk. So this is, to me, what I think
we are our own worst enemies. That is true. Yeah.
Like, you know, this, I'll use Star Wars because I love Star Wars. Star Wars, a show comes out and takes a risk and kind of goes in a slight different direction, or even the Marvel stuff, you know, and people crush it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, it's not that bad. It's pretty good. Yeah. Like, you could argue bang for buck, was it as good, you know, whatever, all that stuff. But to me, it's like, it doesn't, it's like when you argue about the transfer fee of a sports player, like you're not paying it.
Yeah.
You know, so did you enjoy it or not? And and I think our kind of critic culture, that everyone is a critic. It's like you used to, I remember, like, I would not read a critic's comments until I saw the movie myself, because it sort of like shapes the narrative on the show. And now, but everyone's a friggin' critic. There's a million people saying this sucks, it's amazing. And you know, it's like anything else. And, you know, you can't tell what's true, or you have to find someone you have extremely close sensibilities with to determine whether you agree or not. So I don't know. I feel like we've kind of like done it to ourselves. And then we complain when Hollywood is like, well, I don't want to make a new thing because, or I don't want to take this universe in a different direction because literally they'll kill me. Like there'll be pitchforks and torches. Like,
yeah.
So we're a giant angry mob. And you know what you get when you get giant angry mobs, you get weird, crazy rulers and revolutions and weird movies.
I think you hit on it. Like the budget levels for these shows, you know, in the multi-hundred million dollar mark, you know, they have to succeed. I think we're victims as a culture of too much data. And so like marketing drives a lot of the decision-making around casting, around content, around, you know, whatever. And you're absolutely right. Like statistics show that we go to see these prequels and sequels often at the expense of new stuff. So we shouldn't then be surprised that no new stuff happens.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're not wrong. We are kind of manufacturing in a roundabout way this sort of market. My hope though is that like with the price pressure we're seeing, you know, the film business being cyclical, yes, maybe the cycle is a bit different because of AI and it's more wide reaching, but like, you know, we had a lackluster filmmaking through a period of the 60s. And then, you know, we got the 70s, we had this sort of revolution where these small budget, easy rider type movies came out. Maybe that's where we're destined to go back to, is like,
I think so.
More smaller budget where, you know, the producers are not looking at spreadsheets to decide whether the movie gets a green light, but they have an instinct like the good old days. And this just sounds like a cool, like a hit. Maybe that's the road ahead.
We'll see, but I remember like people used to complain about like all the manufactured music and stuff. Now that's all fragmented as well, and sometimes I ask them, okay, well, if you don't like that, how many local bands do you see? Like how many shows do you go out to? And it's like, well, none.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And often it was in the context of, hey, come see my band. You know, like, we're not as good as those guys, but we won't get good if you don't come out and see them. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt.
It is weird. Like having this supercomputer in your pocket has made us lazy in a lot of ways. Like we don't need to leave the house to see a movie. We don't need to leave the house to see our favorite band perform in Rome or, you know, whatever. There's a lot of disincentives in a lot of ways to go out and see, you know, live music, but.
Well, and also everybody
really replaced
up with their phones.
Oh yeah, that's hilarious. You go to the concert and they're all watching the concert through their phone.
So I'm going to a concert tonight and it's one of those ones where you have to like package your phone. And it's so annoying, but it's also like a very different experience.
Yeah.
And I won't have to look through someone's phone to see what you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even Napalm Death, which is like anti-establishment, punk rock, crazy stuff. People are like filming it. And like, I took a picture, but I'm not videotaping a song. And I'm thinking to myself, like, are you here to capture the event or are you here to experience the event?
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, it's, and you see it in the most extreme circumstances, someone's injured or whatever, and people take off their phones instead of helping the person. It's like a weird thing. So, there's no doubt that the perception of things has changed, like the vertical versus horizontal. Like there's all kinds of chaos in that. And there, you know, there's definitely some negatives there, but there could be some interesting things that come out. Like I saw another article, I think we talked about this, about 60-second microdramas coming out of China. It's like, I mean, to plan and shoot those things, it's like you have it's like planning 100 commercials. It's wild. Yeah. So
but they're starting to get budgets now. Like, I think there's a really Glock that's got like a $300K budget. You know, in the scope of a TV show, that's not great, but you're going to pay your actors and you're going to be able to get it edited correctly. And yeah, it's pretty phenomenal.
So, you know, so the message there is, it's sort of like wide open in a weird way. That's what I'm finding. So, and that's my, actually it's my kind of problem. I'll get it. So like, I've been distracted with this summer. I set up a plan when I was not working, where I was like, okay, I'll do some, usually what I'll do is the first month I'll like intensely try to get rehired. And then you realize, okay, there's nothing going on. And then you have to kind of switch from sprint to sustain. And in that process, I go crazy. So I need to do something productive. So I, you know, raised my shed up and got thumbs up syndrome. but I accomplished that, and it's actually pretty crazy what I did. But and in hindsight, at the time I was like exhausted, and it was fully engaging and did the trick, essentially, other than like hurting myself in some small ways. Mentally, it was fantastic. When I finished that, I went to the World Cup. And again, that was sort of a planned thing. And I was just like, you know, the World Cup's still going on, but coming back from Vancouver, it was like, oh, now I have to do all the, I have to figure this all out again. So the VFX existential crisis came right back. And then I was like, oh shit, now what? So I'm having this like World Cup hangover, and it's, you know, it's been challenging because it's also kind of summer and people are around, and there's lots of distractions. And so I'm kind of in this state of like, should I just relax? Or, and we've talked about it, like there's a guilt in not doing anything towards, there's a guilt in kind of like taking the time. And my wife always makes fun of me in a way, like she's like, you keep talking about wanting this time, but as soon as you get it, you're worried you can't enjoy it. And that's kind of the pickle I'm in right now. Is like, even during the World Cup when I was away, like I didn't fully, it's hard to fully enjoy it because you feel like you should be doing something towards, you know, your own prosperity and things like that. So
totally. We talked about this offline. It's like, your work and your job hunt and your resting life kind of blur together.
Yeah.
And so you're not satisfied with anyone. And like, we joked about how, you know, my parents, you know, they'll make a full day of the dentist appointment. So what did you do? Oh, I went to the dentist. And like, there are days when I feel like that. What did you do today? Oh, I had a call. Like, you know, yay, you know. And I think I get way more done when I'm busy. And so it becomes a question of manufacturing the busyness. Yeah. And then, like you said, when there's like all my kids are around, my wife's a teacher, so she's home for the summer. Mm. It very much feels like vacation time here in the Petty household. And you need a lot of resilience to keep focused and doing the things that need to get done.
Yeah, I'm having trouble with that. The other thing is, since I've got this thumbs up syndrome or de Quervain syndrome, I can't do, well, I can, but I'm not supposed to do certain things. And like, use your left thumb quite a lot in most things. So like some of the things that I would normally do to sort of quell that, like I go and, you know, clean up the yard, or I, you know, trim the trees or something that's like a clear goal, do X, Y, Z finished to feel some sense of accomplishment. And even some of my hobbies like painting and things like that, I can't do as easily. So there's not been a lot of like things that feel like success. And I think it's interesting to reflect on that, because the difference, like, so what I realize is like, I need to have those small things were big things, you know, in sustaining that kind of mental health, so I wasn't having a great weekend. But but then so I decided, and you know, this is my process. I go through this, like, I don't know, I'm all over the place. I have a lot of things, and I just zero in on one thing, and I'd like kill it. People who've worked with me kind of always tell me they don't, I'm a little wishy-washy at the beginning, but then all of a sudden I come out of left field and I'm like super focused.
And you lock in.
Yeah. Which I, you know, it's part of my thinking and then acting kind of thing. But so one of the things that I started, because I feel like it was interesting, because I mean, we're going to talk about this, but we were talking about some of the things we wanted to do with the podcast. It got me thinking about some other things and researching some things and looking at what other people are doing. And then I realized like, and my brother-in-law who I was staying with at the World Cup also works in animation, a little older, but in our kind of age range. And then some of his friends, meeting his friends, they're kind of in the same boat. They're like, I don't know, I'm working now, but I don't know if I'm going to be working, and I'm not working, and I'm supposed to be working. So we were kind of, he said to me something and it resonated. It's like, I guess I'm retired.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, does this mean I'm retired? And then I started, so I watched a few things, and because I was interested in that. And I there was a whole bunch of material about, like, you know, people think they're going to retire at 65, but on average they retire at 62. And most of the time, in fact, I think the majority of the time, I don't know what the statistics are, the majority of the time, they don't choose to retire. So it's usually they got laid off. They have their own health problems.
Right.
Or they're taking care of aging parents.
Right.
And so I was like, so one of the videos I was watching is like, it's a myth to think you're going to get to 60. If you get to 65, great. And then some of it was like, you know, depending on how your financial situation is, they also were looking at like the curve of when your health goes down, which was depressing. But it's like, you know, so 50 to 60 is like your best window to enjoy your life, where you have,
yeah,
in theory, like the best
fun. Your wits about you. You can still climb a ladder.
Yeah. You can do things, walk, do stuff. And then after that, it goes down. Like, obviously it changes for different people. And they were saying too, like, there's this sort of ever present. If you've been, so like someone like me, who, like, we've talked about on the podcast, like, I have been pretty disciplined at saving, which I started late, to be fair. Like, I wasn't great. If I'd done it in my 20s, I'd be in better situation, but sure. Didn't really start till I was in my 30s. As both my wife and I were kind of late bloomers into our careers. But basically, like, if you got into this mindset of save, you can, like, overshoot that, where, like, okay, you go, I'm going to work for 2 more years. I'm 67. I retire. And then your health deteriorates and you can't, you know, it's, you're 70 and you can't do the things you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that all really, like, resonated with me, on top of the idea of, like, how much, like, so, you know, you come from your relative situation, however much money you're making, when it disappears, you know, you get used to things. Everybody gets used to things. And so, going through this process of, like, and I've been pretty good about this, like, shaking myself down to prepare for these things, because I've had this situation before where I try not to get used to things, although, but it's inevitable. You will get, to some extent, you'll adapt positive or negatively. But so the question is, like, well, how much money do I really need?
So, like, you're reversing the calculation.
Yeah.
How much do I need to make if I can retire now?
Well, you know, at first it was like, well, how much do I, so, you know, when government programs run out, how much money do I actually need? And also part of it is because now it's been a little bit longer and you start occasionally starting to dip into, like, the reserves. And then you're like, is that because I'm being reckless in my spending, or is that I've had, like, every single thing gone wrong too? Like, my water heater leaks. somebody smashes my windshield, my brakes go, you know, it's like the universe is just like, hey, let's make it interesting. So
congratulations, you tried to save.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, so there's been a bit of a strain on, you know, finances because the regular things are kind of, there's been spikes. So I was part of this was like, well, how much, if I can't, let's say I can't get back into this crazy business, or if I'm going to start my own business, what's my minimum target? Like,
yeah,
if I start a business and it makes $5,000 a year, is that enough to live, or is that no, like you can't do it. So, and these will start to shape your decisions, like what you're trying to do or where they rank in priority, I think is really what it is. So I was thinking about that. Then I started to look at this retirement stuff because we were kind of at the point where when the kids were about to go to university, my daughter's about to go to university, we thought, okay, we should get some outside help to sort of look and go, okay, what do we really need to do? Because it's quite complicated. But having no money, I thought, well, why don't I try to do it myself as best I can? So that if I do go to somebody else down the road, it's at least, you know, at least partially thought through. So I started that yesterday of trying to build my own retirement plan in detail. But it's selfishly also, how much money do I need right now? So it's kind of a two-prong thing, like, could I retire right now? One of the things that struck me in some of the videos I was watching is a good way to retire is to not fully retire. It's to sort of like phase in retirement, because many people have the same problem we're having with, like, the guilt and the, I don't know what to do with myself. Like, if you worked your whole life and then you just stop, a lot of people go crazy. It creates like marital strain and all that kind of stuff. So a good way to do it is to phase into it, whether that's earlier to get to retirement or when, if you hit 65 and you just want to keep busy and active, like, you know, the classic is the Walmart greeter at the store, you know, it's like, or the guy who drives you in the shuttle from the dealer, like, you know, like the older guy, part-time job. So those kind of things. So, and my father was quite successful in doing that. He worked at the hydro and he had a home inspection business, and it wasn't like enough to replace his income, but it was a very good supplement to his income. He was very interested in it, and he was able to tailor it to whatever he wanted to do. Like, I was thinking when I was watching the Rick Sander interview that we, that you did, and everyone should check that out, it's really good, is that that's another kind of job where you could go full tilt. But as you know, as you kind of want to stop, you either can, and real estate agents is another one, you can either bring somebody else in to take on the burden, or you just work with less clients. Like, so those kind of things, but figuring out when that would be to me has sort of taken up my brain space. So
yeah, I feel like the economy is like pushing everyone to the logical conclusion, right? Like, our parents had long-term jobs. You get your university degree, you got hired by a company and you worked there till you retired. And then
and you got a pension.
Yeah. And you finished your life. And then it became, well, now we're going to do that, but there's no pension. And then it became, well, you're going to start your career at one place and learn some stuff. And then the only way to get a substantial raise is to like move somewhere else. So the hopscotching began.
Yep.
Then it became like kind of this gig economy where, you know, people were supplementing their regular job with, you know, Uber driving, and then Uber driving became a job. And now I think we're in this phase where people are just trying to make ends meet almost any which way they can, you know, and what that looks like for everybody is a little bit different. If you've got, you know, skilled trades, stuff to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of work for that. I think that's one AI, at least for now, one AI proof industry.
You have to watch the robots on that one, but
yeah. So I think what you and I are experiencing too, like, and on top of, you know, the entertainment economy collapsing and rebuilding itself and evolving, the rest of the economy is going through some of that too, with, you know, struggles and the market, and well, actually the market's not struggling, ironically, but it's the labor market that's struggling.
Which is good, because I'm relying on that.
Yeah. And, you know, costs are going up for people, right? And so it's like kind of this unfortunate time where, you know, the cost of existing is going up in the West, and the rewards for work are kind of going down to some extent, at least for now. And so these questions about, you know, what are you going to do with your life? What's important to you? Kind of become front and center, whether you want them to or not. And then, you know, like Chris says, the countdown to retirement, like, what do I really need to bank so that I can actually exist the rest of my life in some level of comfort?
So, I mean, I think we're kind of in that category, maybe a bit early, where it's like, okay, well, you've been laid off and maybe there's no industry. So that's kind of interesting, but also it's a bit of an ego death as well, because that's maybe something I'm struggling with. Like, you know, we're both pretty ambitious guys, and you put so much energy into moving forward, moving up, all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like, poof, gone. And it's, you know, how much of your self-worth is put into that title?
Yeah.
And so part of me is like, so that's been the interesting thing is like, do I, like, don't get me wrong, if someone offers me a job tomorrow, I'm in. But how much do I want to do that? And then the question is, if I don't want to do that, then how possible is that? And even, you know, I called it like the FU money and the financial stuff. It's like, if you have FU money, then it feels like every decision is yours.
Yeah.
And it's a similar kind of attitude here. It's like, well, if I could, you know, go and work at Starbucks and retire in, like, you know, if I worked at a store for like the next 10 years, would I be okay? And then, you know, or if I don't work for 6 months of the year and I get a couple gigs every once in a while, am I good? Because that's, you know, obviously that's not going to be everybody's case. And I think especially as you, if you're in your 30s and 40s, that's harder, especially if you have a family. But, you know, like, pretty much right now I'm working for tuition. And then the next question is, well, after that, how much do I need to work?
Yeah.
And because then the need versus the want, in an ideal situation, I wouldn't need to work, although I'm sure I will. But then it would be more like, I want to. And then you have some.
Yeah, then it's more power. Like a not even volunteerism, because you'd be getting paid, but it's like, it's willful, like you're not you don't have a gun to your head, you're doing it because you want to.
And then you don't have to, like, then I always feel like that's more freeing. Like, it's one of the reasons why when I go into any job, I just sort of assume I'm gonna get fired. Like, it's not because I'm gonna try to do anything to get fired, it's just that I'm in a position, and it's happened to me, where you're in a position of responsibility. If something goes wrong, it's like a coach on a sports team, they can't fire all the artists, so they're gonna maybe fire you or somebody else who doesn't deserve to be fired or whatever.
And the GM or the coach gets the axe. Right.
So I always find it took me a while to get to that point. But once I did, then I was like, you can't really do anything you can do things to upset me. I get upset fairly easily because I do care about the work, but you can't do anything to really, really rattle me.
Yeah.
It's all minor stuff. It's nothing major. And when you work with people who are really desperate and they really need it, they do really wild stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're the leader in that situation, that's not great. So
desperation cuts both ways, because the right personality will take it as a drive and overperform, but the wrong person will feel a sense of panic and will underperform because they need some space and some peace to like actually execute. And so, that's more of an individualized problem, but I've seen both happen.
It's sort of the warrior spirit. Like, you go into the battle knowing you're going to die, and then you're not scared of death. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Since I've been doing kendo, which I can do kendo with thumbs up so far, with this thumbs up syndrome. So I've done a couple, so I'm pretty happy about that. I'm twice a week I'm doing samurai type stuff. So it's, you know, it's kind of interesting because there's a persistence, and this is a lot of things in Japanese culture like this. There's a persistence of like trying to just better yourself without really any ego. It's like it's an interesting philosophy. I'm glad I'm doing that because it's actually helping in other ways. Like,
So
I think that's kind of the same mentality. It's like, you know, I watch my father do this. Like, he had a pension, he had his home inspection business, and he did consulting and education, similar to you, but in that industry. And he would take the job more because he was interested in it.
Mm.
And there was a definite goal with it. So the last job that I did, I was like, it helped me to position it as, I'm going to pay for this with this 2 months of work.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to pay 1 year's tuition for my children. You know what I mean? And so it does a couple things. It sets a financial goal. It sets like some, you know, I'm not just going to blow it all on restaurants and Uber Eats or whatever. So it added some discipline, but it also gave a really clear benefit. Cause you know how it is. You do a show and then you're like, okay, it's done. And then you're like, there's that hangover and it's like on to the next one. But when you don't always get that movie moment where it's like, and it's done and everything's
great. Yeah.
It's just like, oh, it's done. And on to the next one. So yeah.
Some clients don't even give you that satisfaction. Like, oh, now we need to do the DVD video version.
Sure.
Streaming version. It's like, oh my God, you're doing versions forever.
It's the same like with Christmas. It's like, if you don't make some markers about it, it sort of just drifts by, you know. Oh, I hit my microphone. So it just sort of drifts by. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out like, how much do I need regular income and how much is sort of like the needs, the secondary need / wants, those kind of blurry ones. And then they like, whatever. So, but I have to say So the first thing you're supposed to do is like, look at all your expenses. Oh my God, it's such an annoying process to go and get all your expenses from the bank and all your credit cards and all this kind of stuff and then put them in a spreadsheet. So it's not for the faint of heart. I've looked for software that does it better and it's like everything's a subscription model. And
it's terrible. Yeah.
I did try using ChatGPT to give me like a retirement planner. I asked it the question. It's very helpful, which is sort of weird and annoying, but it's weirdly like needy. but I haven't really looked at what it's produced, so I'm kind of curious to see how that goes. Because I think for people who don't have the money to do financial planning, or maybe not the wherewithal, that's like an avenue where I think that could probably help a lot of people at least get the basics down. It's pretty established, but you know, if you're going to a financial planner and you're not paying them, then they have their own interests. And if you are paying them, it's like $3,500 plus. That's a big outlay when you're in this situation. So that's what I've been doing. And what led me to some of the, like, I was thinking a lot about it before, but then we started to talk about what we wanted the podcast to be going forward. We had some conversations with different people who were interested in helping us. And it's been really great to talk about VFX and connect with VFX people. But one of our thoughts is that maybe we don't want to necessarily come back here every episode and talk about how terrible the industry is. It's kind of a little bit depressing. I mean, you hope things go. And I'll just, before I carry on, I will say I have noticed there's more jobs. Like there are three or four jobs that I've applied for in the last week that are legitimate steps in the right direction in Toronto. So either VFX producer, animation producer, or VFX supervisor for animation or things. So that's an interesting sign as well, because when you see those ads, that means they're trying to build some capacity to do additional projects, which will mean, you know, for every one VFX producer or supervisor, you know,
30 people probably to get hired.
30 plus people to be hired at some point. So that's a good sign. A lot of competition. So I don't know what the prospects of that are, but, you know, somebody, I did an interview and that's better than it's been for a while. So that's good. But yeah, so we've been reflecting on the podcast and what's doing well and what's not doing well. Generally speaking, it's pretty consistent, but we realize
that the diehards that
watch thank you. So we don't want to abandon you all, but at the same time, I think we realize that some of the things we're talking about, if we just unlock a little bit of the VFX focus, that is actually quite a bit of a broader topic. And our curiosity has kind of led us there.
Yeah.
You know, like talking to Rick about Switch, I don't think there's anything fundamentally different about what we're thinking, but it's maybe more rebranding outside of visual effects specifically. We will obviously talk about media and animation and VFX going forward because that's our background. But like a lot of the things that we're talking about here, people in telecom and games and, you know, and a lot of industries are going through the same thing, the retirement planning, same thing. Like, so there's a lot of common themes where we feel like we could maybe build our audience and maybe also add a little bit of different perspectives into the same, you know, soup, if you will. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's funny because you were talking earlier about, and I'm going to get to this, it's going to take a long way around. Like, we were talking about things that we were kind of grieving, or at least that's what I took out of some of the things you were saying. And like, yeah. I'm surprised that, like, I'm actually not grieving the paycheck in a big way. Like, you know, I can't remember who I was talking this with, but like, there is a premium in VFX for your job. Like, if you're a coordinator at an office, you're not making what a coordinator does in VFX, and that runs all the way sort of up the chain. It is very highly specialized and very volatile, as we know. But you know,
the pay is
pretty good. I look at equivalent GM jobs in non-VFX industries, and the drop off is shocking. And you know, now that the market is depressed, the labor market, I mean, the you know, people are asking for like global head of XYZ for 100K, and I'm just like, are you for real? Like, all this liability and responsibility and work for 100K, and you want all these credentials and things. And like, I've kind of come to believe, like, if I can make 100K regularly on my own, it's way better than making 200K working for somebody else. Like, just the autonomy and all that kind of stuff that comes along. So yeah, like, I've got these sort of new consulting opportunities that are coming forward, and they're larger than the ones I'm doing now, but they're all outside of the industry. And so like, I'm kind of grieving leaving VFX, if that makes any sense. Like, and I haven't, you know, there's no date. I can't say, oh, it's tomorrow or whatever, but that's the way the indicators are going. And I'm like, they're kind of dragging me that way. I'm not really pushing myself out but increasingly it's becoming obvious that like,
it's probably rare to stay.
Not a future for me because of my profile, because of my perceived expense level, all that stuff. I'm probably going to go someplace else. But yeah, it's sad. I, like, of all the things, like, you know, I remember people calling me for advice and people, like, you know, asking me to do interviews and things like that, and sending me to SIGGRAPH because they wanted me to be part of the experience at their expense and things like that. And that's the kind of stuff I miss. And also being in the trenches on a creative project, like, there's really nothing quite like it. So all that stuff is actually the stuff that I'm grieving. But I think the writing is on the wall. And this is kind of coming back to Chris's point about the podcast. Like, we kind of started it from a place of love and compassion for VFX artists. But, you know, one of the things I've learned in my consulting life is there's a thing called a total addressable market. And if you're building your investment deck and you want to get investors, you want the total market to be big. You know, you don't want it to be small. And unfortunately, visual effects is absolutely tiny. And it's not a great place to invest if you're a software company or if you're an individual. You want to have a bigger... So we're looking to talk about some of the same topics, but more on a generational level, I would say. You know, we're going through a lot. We're learning a lot. I think we have a lot of advice to learn. And also, too, like, some of it's trial and error. Like, you know, we've tried things that sometimes don't work out, but that's also stuff that we can express. And Chris and I had like a long meeting this morning about what we kind of want the next version of this to be. Like, I don't want to come on every week and bitch about AI or complain about how the studios aren't making stuff fast enough. Like, we want to talk about happy topics, you know, like, so we want to have, you know, build a community that's really kind of positive and like has good energy and is looking for advice on any manner of things that are, you know, is affecting people in our age group. So, and it could be very trivial on the surface, or they could be really meaningful, but one thing we have concluded is that we liked this experience. We love working together. I think we're still new at this and we're getting better. And I think we will continue to get better, even from like topic selection and sort of reining in the drift, if you will. But I think we got something kind of cool going on. So if we could just kind of re-kick it off with a bit of a broader appeal, I think that would be good for us. Like, if we're going to put this effort in, we want to make it meaningful for us too. And so, you know, we got some great advice from Rick, and we got some great advice from some other people about like just leveling up the production values a little bit and, you know, kind of segueing into a more broad audience.
And honestly, it's also partly because we have kind of come out of the VFX animation fog a little bit, because you do get sort of, you know, stuck, you know, I mean, that's where you're living. It would be the same in any industry. And you're playing that game with a pretty high intensity. So you tend to like, I mean, at least for me, when I work on a project, I'm pretty, you know, 80, 90% in that project, and the rest is for family and things like that. So coming out of that and reflecting on it, it's like, I'm curious about different things. And I do think they apply to our audience, but but they also apply to other people. And
yes,
I think one of the things that I really liked about the Rick Sander interview is that it was kind of like a profile of someone who has made a career transition. Yes, you could frame it as this person got out of VFX, but it literally could be useful to anyone who is, you know, stopped working in their job of 20 years and now needs to figure out what they're going to do with their lives. You know, maybe you're talking to a different audience at that point. So, you know, you can't necessarily rely on the audience to have photography and skills like that, but some of the experience is the same. So I think, you know, what we're looking towards is probably in the fall.
Yeah.
You know, rebranding or transitioning into a broader kind of lens, but we will still end up kind of coming back to things that our media and Hollywood and VFX and animation focus, because that's, you know, our point of origin, I think. And what's been interesting to me is, so the people who have really commented and things like that, like about getting a different perspective on their own jobs and things like that. But I've also had people comment who have no connection to VFX and saying to me, yeah, that was kind of interesting about this. And that's, how they referred to it in their own lives was interesting. And so that's also kind of got me thinking about it. And the reality is I'm still trying to, well, and we're both trying to still stay connected to visual effects. And, you know, I am still doing available for visual effects or animation jobs, but I'm not relying on it anymore. So more and more I'm having to like, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where
I know. Yeah.
So this sort of timeline I created for myself of like up till basically August, like we have family vacations coming up. It's gone by. And now it's like, you know, and then the secret hope is someone offers you a job, you take the easy route out and you're working again. But more and more it's like, well, that might not happen. So, and you know, you start to, you know, someone smashes your windshield and you're like, ah, I got to now grab that $500 from my reserve fund. And it's not just part of my rate. And then these things start to open your eyes and start to create a little, and I know you've already gone through this.
Yeah.
You start to go like, uh-oh, I gotta like get, so I've been, you know, selling old stuff and doing that kind of thing. But yeah, so it's sort of, I can't rely on it. And even like we've said this before, even if I got another job in the industry, is it a permanent? Is it a 1-year contract? Is it a 6-month contract? Like I think you need to start to think about other revenue streams. And you've talked about this is your new year thing, is like as many revenue streams as possible.
Multiple small revenue streams is kind of the ideal. I mean, it's actually a lot to handle. It would be nice to have one regular steady stream, but I think at a practical level, you know, that's what's coming. Like I have a slightly different experience to you in my work pattern. And that is to say, like, virtually every job I've gotten has been better than the one before, with a substantial pay bump and more responsibility. So like, I've always been on this, like, oh, next trajectory is a better job. And like, even when I was at Cinesite, you know, I was always
my experience up to this point too.
Yeah. So like, this is, well, you said at the beginning of your career, the industry was less stable and there was more, you felt more giggy, and that kind of framed your planning, right? I always had more than yesterday. So for me, this is a shock, right? And so I didn't have that expectation of this is going to come to an end. Like I never really felt that. I still feel young. So like, even in my early 50s, I'm like, oh, like, I don't perceive myself as an early 50-year-old, if you will.
Right. Which I know what you mean.
A me problem, you know what I mean? But that's fine. All this to say is that, like, it did come halting in a lot of ways. Like, I dreamed of, like, oh, maybe when I finished, because, you know, like, Cinesite would have been the second or third studio I managed. And I'm like,
yeah.
I need to take the next level up after a while. Either that's a global role running multiple sites or an exec in Hollywood. Like, I had all these, you know, plans.
The rat race.
I don't really have that anymore. Like, I don't really have any big ambitions to do. I mean, first of all, it doesn't exist in VFX anymore. Like, of all the industries to want to be moving up in, that's not the one. But yeah, I've enjoyed the entrepreneurship. It's definitely, I like the doing of the entrepreneurship way more than the prospecting. Like,
yeah,
that's the harder part, is like when you make a great connection and you get a great referral. I love working with them and delivering good work and adding value. But yeah, then it's like going out with the empty cup to all your former colleagues and saying, hey, you got anything I can help you with?
Marketing is a thing. Yeah,
it's slightly humiliating, and I have the wrong attitude. I think like it's supposed to be networking and all that kind of stuff, and that is part of the grind, but it's the part I think I like the least, if you will.
Yeah, if you have little self-awareness, you're usually much better at that.
Yeah, totally. I have way too much self-awareness to be out there pounding it, but it needs to be done for sure. And you know, obviously the podcast is a pillar of exposure and an opportunity for us to show that we actually know something about something. And, you know, to the extent that we can reach a broader audience, that's also more useful.
And to be perfectly honest, like if this could become even a small revenue stream or not a drain, that would be, that prospect is interesting because we both enjoy doing it.
Yeah. And we've set up some targets for ourselves, by the way, like some financial targets that we want to hit in, you know, 6-12 months, and that's sort of our runway to figure out. And I think if we follow through with the plan we have and the rebrand and the change, I think it is going to be something that's going to be marketable and appealing at a much wider level. And then, you know, things like a brand deal or an ad read are not actually out of the question.
Well, your lips to God's ears. And so let's hope, but we're enjoying the process enough that it's worth the energy to see if we can make it something where we earn some money. And then honestly, like, I'm just curious about different things now, and my interests are kind of all over the place at the moment, partly because I'm a little like not sure what I want to do with my life. But I think that could be interesting to other people as well. And hopefully still to everybody who's listening now. So that's kind of the idea, is like, can we turn this into something, turn something like, really, can you turn something you enjoy into money?
Yeah.
And not hate it, and maybe even make it more enjoyable. That's kind of the goal. And so if there's anything specifically visual effects that you feel like you want to hear from us on, please go ahead and comment, because we have a bunch of ideas of what we want to talk about soon, but we also kind of want to do the service to the community that it's currently in, sort of talk about things that we think are relevant. We've done some like rather deep dives into things maybe not too many people are interested in, and I'm happy to do that if there's, you know, 10 of you out there who care about it.
If there's some seminal event in the visual effects world that we want to come back to, or entertainment more broadly, we can still drop an episode here. I just think that the routine effort's going to go into something that's a bit more agnostic.
I think it'll be like, I really believe that will permeate our new idea, because it's just who we are.
How do you divorce the entertainment business from us? It's like,
also, you know, like I said, like, people are interested in it broadly as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amount of, if you look at LinkedIn and the amount of people commenting about AI in Hollywood, not all of them work in the industry. They're just trying to create some kind of, you know, stream of information, or who knows what they're trying to do, but a lot of experts out there.
All of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what I'm actually kind of most excited about is not being the expert in some cases, and like learning more about it, or maybe being like a prosumer and learning from an expert. Like, you know, I gave my financial sort of structure, but I would love to talk to someone who is a retirement expert or a money expert, and ask them specific questions like that don't get asked, you know, or don't get explained in sort of the regular kind of standard content that you see, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people our age too are dealing with aging parents, and like, what does that look like? You know, are they moving in? What are the financial implications of putting them in a retirement home? Is that what your culture allows? Like, there's all kinds of discussions around different kinds of struggles that people in our age band are having. Kids, you know, my daughter's going to college. She was at university and wasn't getting a lot of value out of it. Said, you know, this isn't for me. What advice do you give your kids in a world of AI where information's largely commoditized and a quick Claude search can give you pretty significant answers? You know, is there an arts degree you value anymore? Like, you know, all kinds of stuff.
I've been thinking a lot about that because my daughter's going to university in the fall, and my advice to her the other day, she's getting ready to pick her courses, and it's like, you know, you have the luxury of being able to go to that school, and a lot of people will focus on the outcome, understandably, because it's expensive. But, you know, there's like this sort of idea that an education is valuable on its own as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think, you know, there's been a corporatization of education and politics, and so where it's like there needs to be a direct work placement outcome. And I understand that because I was frustrated by that as well. But there's also, looking back, it's like the broader education has served me pretty well. And if you have the luxury of doing that, then just friggin' enjoy it. Because
what I think is important is, like, it's exactly the opposite advice that we were largely given. It's like, you know, you went to university or you went to college, like, that was sort of it. And, you know, depending on your family makeup, you know, if you did anything else, you were, you know, a failure. Because that was, you know, at least for my parents, it was school. And it was basically for me, it was university only. And then, are you doing medical school or law school? Like, kind of that was sort of the baseline. And I just think that that advice, like, unless you're doing medical school, because I wouldn't even say law school is a safe bet anymore with AI coming through. Unless you have a really clear view and you're doing STEM or engineering or something that's going to lead to a perfect, I just don't think the value is there. I mean, and in Canada, things are so heavily subsidized. In the States, I can't even imagine spending $100,000 on an arts degree, like, and coming out with the kind of debt that American students have. Like, I think in the USA in particular, you have to really think much more seriously about the education value you're getting out of your, because it is an investment. And I just think that the calculus has changed over the course of our lives, where what was true for us mostly when we were growing up isn't true anymore. And I don't think a lot of people are talking about it.
No, that's true. But I think, you know, it's like when you talk to artists, so I weirdly for university and education, I take more an artistic approach to it. So it's like, yes, there might be an outcome that you're trying to achieve, but like the process of learning and learning whatever you're interested in, it can be conceived as a waste of time by people who are only focused on specific outcomes, but it can also be like a joy. Now, if you put yourself into endless debt for the rest of your life to do so, that's definitely a bigger decision. But as I was saying to my daughter, it's like, well, I have put you in this position, and so enjoy.
You can make the choice. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you go on vacation, enjoy the vacation. Don't worry about how much money you're spending because you've earned it. So,
yeah.
So it's, but it's definitely, you know, a different calculus if your goal is to be trained for a job, for sure.
Yeah.
But anyways, so these are the types of things that we talk about, and you know, they're not visual effects oriented, but they're less visual effects oriented as we go. And
they're people oriented.
They're more. Yes, exactly. So we're noticing a trend in our own conversations, even in this podcast and outside. And so we want to take advantage of that and rule the world as well, and maybe make a dollar instead of minus a dollar. So selfishly, that's what we're kind of looking towards. So like I said, we do want to wrap up any topics that people are interested in. So if you have comments about what you want to hear us talk about, then go for it. Otherwise, we will keep doing like a regular podcast with this in mind. And then, but we'll be slowly transitioning into sort of more broad topics, and then probably with some kind of formal rebrand when we get our act together.
Yeah.
So
after this baking hot summer ends, and we'll plan throughout the summer and probably launch something.
That is the goal.
After Labor Day.
Yes. Depending on how our other revenue streams go, dependent, because right now this one is the lowest revenue stream.
What are you talking about?
It's a drain. So anyways, but yeah, so with that in mind, thanks for listening as always. And please do keep listening, because I do think we are VFX people, and we're going to try to do stuff that we think is interesting as well. So it shouldn't exclude anyone. And like I said, if you have any other topics, then put them in the comments and like and subscribe. I don't know the logistics of that going forward, but like and subscribe just for our own morale. And yeah, we'll see you out there in the universe, and stay cool out there in the summer.
Bye for now.
See you guys.
Bye.